Still we won't be beaten, we'll scrimp and screw and save. The playing fields of Eton have made us frightfully brave. And though if the Van Dykes have to go and we pawn the Bechstein brand, we'll stand by the stately homes of England.
Stately Homes of Wiltshire, Chapter 3. Draco did not wake up in his bedroom. He was summoned to consciousness by the rustling of the magnificent gold and silver damask on the state bed in the king's bedroom, which was so slippery he nearly slid to the floor. He shifted, and a cloud of dust rose up into the dim air. "No!" Draco croaked and sneezed. His head pounded as if a hippogriff had trod upon it. "This bed is for the king!" hissed Porcius Malfoy's dusty portrait. "Not for young drunkards!" Draco spoke into the coverlet. "The king never even bloody visited." "No, his disquiet regarding witches. However, he still might," Porcius said, stalwart. "There's a queen now. She's on all the currency." "The lady, too, wouldst like it. 5 mattresses in total, 2 goose down, the rest common straw. A year's work on the damask. Woven gold and silver thread in the hangings. This bed did cost nearly £400, my son." Porcius shifted his robes, the rustle unnecessarily loud. "This wouldst be fit for any monarch living, nay, even those dead." "Please, please stop shouting." The damask smelled truly awful. Draco could not remember if anyone during the occupation had taken this room. Probably not. Despite what Porcius was claiming, Draco did not feel any goose down beneath his limbs. Still, some were more attached to the guilt than the quality of the mattress. Oh, Salazar's rotting corpse! Draco hoped no one truly vile had slept here. Porcius went into a sulk, and Draco attempted to remember how best to get to his bathroom from the king's bedroom, where if life were kind, he'd find pain potion. Would Accio at this distance result in a broken bottle? A loud and important throat clearing broke his reverie. He looked up to see that Gaius Malfoy had joined Porcius in the frame, nearly edging the latter out with the expanse of his opulent ruff. "'Tis the gate," Gaius said. "A visitor hast called. The potterboy. Thy house-elf still slumbers. If it be true that thou may ask me..." "Thou didn't," Draco mumbled. Gaius continued unconcerned. "The young master mayst consider acquiring a more youthful house-elf. The servant sets the course for the household boy." "No," Draco said, his head hurting far too much for his normal lecture on the subject. "The boy doth not mark me, nor the rest of his ancestors," Gaius sighed. "Speak not to me, sodomite!" Porcius backed up in his own portrait, ducking behind green velvet curtains. "Go prick thy face, clay-brained guts!" Gaius swept from the frame, leaving Porcius to hesitantly re-emerge. It took Herculean effort for Draco to turn over. When he finally did, he spied that an industrious spider had spun her web from one of the bedposts, reaching nearly halfway across to the opposite post. Spiders didn't drink. This was wise of them. "Fuck," Draco said quietly. Porcius sniffed. "Fuck," Draco said even more quietly. It was time. He needed to stand up. Merlin, he hated himself so much. So much more even than on an ordinary, less wine-soaked day, which was already a not unsubstantial amount. Thanks to Coote's strict beliefs about drunkenness, she'd managed quite a stint of house-elf overindulgence in her time. If he was sick all over the antique carpet, he would have to clean it up himself. Therefore, Draco could not be sick on the carpet. He could be sick in a toilet, which would clean itself. The nearest toilet was all the way by the potioner's parlour. Therefore, Draco could not be sick in a toilet. He could not be sick anywhere. He would have to die. He would have to die quietly and be posthumously launched into an active volcano. Slowly, Draco slid from the bed to the floor. The back stairs had never seemed more treacherous, but somehow Draco found himself on the ground floor, passing a long corridor full of advice on his way to the front door. "Dipped in the wassailbow, young master, for thee raw eel is what needed. Nay, a lump of fresh soot in warmed milk. Powdered bobo tuber, and the essence of yarrow is what I always used." Yes, because I'm so keen on dying at 25 of intestinal blockage like you did. Draco may not have actually said out loud, but certainly thought. He swung the door open. Potter was not, as he had assumed, standing just outside. Instead, Potter could be glimpsed halfway down the drive having a spirited conversation with the wrong side of the gate. Draco staggered outside, cursed the human race and also nature, and crunched along the gravel towards Potter. "Hi," said Potter. Aside from the dark circles under his eyes, he looked fine, because of course he did. Draco wished more ardently than ever for volcanic immolation. "Why didn't you just do the wand wave thing?" Draco demanded, swaying a bit on the spot. The sky, thankfully, expressed no hint of dastardly sun. Truly, Draco was one with the universe. Said Potter, "I don't know what that is." "You might as well. I already added you to the wards." There was the distinct possibility that Draco was leaning against one of the yew hedges for support. Potter had a funny expression on his face. "Well, you're always here, aren't you? If you are on the wards, you can just do this." Draco waved his wand in a serpentine pattern. The gate dissolved like so much mist. "I'm going to have to learn that," Potter said. He held up a small brown bag. "I brought pain potion." "Oh, fuck you," Draco said. Potter blinked. "If you don't want it, I want it. I want it." Draco grabbed it out of Potter's hands. Just a verbal tick at this point, honestly. "Oh," said Potter. He was smiling. It was awful, but Draco was too hungover to care. "All right." Draco ripped open the packaging. He really should mix it with water, but he could not bring himself to give even the smallest of shits. He took a gulp, braced his stomach, and then took another. "Feeling better?" Draco held one finger up, and Potter fell silent. They stood there waiting. In the distance, a peacock was possibly being sick over some important plant or sculpture. Despite the ill omen, Draco took a deep breath and did not spew the meagre contents of his stomach over the gravel. "Less imminent danger," he said finally. "I always feel like there ought to be a better formula for those things," Potter said, nodding at the bottle. "They only work half the time." "Not with gin, right?" Draco had made that mistake before. "Jaeger bombs," Potter said. "I have no idea what that is, but it sounds disgusting." "Never again," Potter said, then examined Draco with a far too intent expression. "Draco?" "No," Draco said flatly. Potter shrugged. "Do you have a middle name you're going by now? Something multisyllabic and awful?" "Lucius." Potter grimaced. "Indeed." Draco examined the remnants of the pain potion. Just enough for a little more in a couple of hours, if Draco was out of his own remedy. "Let's go in. It's going to rain in a minute." Potter followed him into the hall. Draco could tell he expected them to take the familiar route to the library, but it had been long enough now that Draco really had no choice. They had to go upstairs. "I've never been on this floor before," Potter said, swivelling his head to peer into all the rooms. Dust covers shrouded most of the furniture, but he could see the rest of what happened. Minuscule holes in the wall marked where some of the occupation had played a game of darts. Wooden panelling had been stripped away for firewood. Singe marks from target practice riddled most ceilings and carpets. "What's in those, Potter trailed off, and Draco looked back to see him make a clumsy gesture at turrets. "If this is the highest floor, I mean, how do you get to them? Are there other staircases?" "The banqueting houses are only accessible through the roof," Draco informed him, and braced himself as he swung the heavy door open to the blue bedroom. He saw it anew through Potter's eyes, cluttered, decrepit, and thoroughly damp. Hunks of ceiling had peeled away to expose the beams and rushes underneath, most of which had the green tinge of rot. "You brought a stranger here?" Great Aunt Lysistrata demanded. "Nephew, this is highly irregular." Potter wrinkled his nose. "What's that smell?" Lysistrata gave a shriek of shame and disappeared from view. "Mould, probably," Draco told him and began vanishing the disintegrating carpet. Potter noisily paced the bounds of the bedroom, poking at bits of peeling wallpaper and eyeing the wet patches above their heads. "How did it get like this? It's so much worse up here than on the ground floor. Was it your poltergeists?" "My late father managed with glamour charms rather than sacrifice the galleons for genuine repairs." Draco scowled at the ceiling. Three decades of drips in little-used rooms later, and obviously, we have rot. There was, of course, also the matter of the occupation, but Draco figured that went without saying. Do you think that has anything to do with the poltergeist problem? Oh, I don't know, Potter. Probably. If you're just going to stand there, getting your nose into my business as always, would you mind lending your mythical, magical ability to the bloody problem at hand? Surprisingly, Potter didn't have a retort for him. Instead, he brought out his wand, rolled up the sleeves of his oversized jumper, and began siphoning water out of the sodden wooden panels. Draco watched his bare forearms for a long moment. He honestly had expected Potter to go on interrogating him, or make a break to go searching for dark lairs or cursed cauldrons or whatever it was the Aurors thought Draco got up to in his abundant free time. Had he said something the night before? Draco forced his eyes away. Fine, you start on the walls, and when I finish with the carpets, I'll need assistance with the ceiling. After what could have been an hour of silent toil, Potter finally spoke. Should we just get rid of the furniture? It seems pretty mouldy. Draco looked up. Certainly not. Lysistrata would have my head. He nodded at the vacant portrait and stood, brushing off his knees. We'll finish with the ceiling and then we'll see what can be salvaged. In a striking difference from how he had been in the library, Potter was surprisingly good company as they dried the rushes and transfigured the ceiling beams. Draco supposed it was that irritating Gryffindorian need to do things. He didn't feel the need to chatter or ask nonsensical questions or break priceless heirlooms or sigh pointlessly at truly horrific photographs. Instead, Potter's questions were rather topical, like, is there something we can do about that? Potter was pointing to the fireplace. It had once been oddly grand for the bedroom of a maiden aunt, with spectacular woodworking that told of a more important use for the room in days gone by. Now the cornice moulding had great chunks taken out of it, and the ornate frieze was all but unrecognisable. We could try, Draco said. He had left an ancient book of architectural spells on Lysistrata's bedside table the last time he had worked in this room, and he began flipping through it. Potter peered over his shoulder. His breath was warm on the back of Draco's left ear. An irritating rush of want threatened to drown his entire body. He shoved it to the back of his mind. Ignoring Potter, he aggressively scanned the book for options. Here, he said, jabbing a finger at the page. This is meant for restoring transfiguration. This side is stone, this side is wood. Potter squinted at the page, his chin almost resting on Draco's shoulder. I can't make that out at all. Is this English? Draco elbowed Potter away from him and carried the book to the front of the fireplace. Here, I'll try it, and then you have a go. Draco waved his wand and performed the incantation over the stone lintel that made up the lower portion. With great creaking and crumbling, the stone refashioned itself into some semblance of integrity. He eyed it critically. Not too bad, he decided. Now you. Only you move your wand in the other direction when you're not restoring stone. Draco watched as Potter guided his wand through the same incantation, with the slight variations needed for wood. Hey! Potter stepped back from the fireplace. Look at that! The carved frieze of unicorns above the chimney pieces settled into place, tossing their great manes before going still. Draco blinked. They haven't moved in years. I knew portraits could move, obviously, and photographs and statues, of course, but... Potter gestured up at the unicorns. Brilliant! Even the repairs Draco had done didn't move any more. He did well enough setting them mostly to rights, the wyverns in the long hall and the phoenixes in the dining room, but he figured the original enchantments must have been too worn to ever fully recover. Honestly, Potter, he said, mouth dry, over a decade in the magical world and you don't notice fairly elemental aspects of magical architecture? I've never spent a lot of time in, you know, Potter gestured at the room, stately houses. Hogwarts had moving carvings, Draco said, still watching the unicorns. You really didn't notice. I don't know why I'm surprised. You have an incredible talent for compartmentalisation. Potter made a face. I had a lot on my mind. Yes, yes, you're very heroic. Now, can you please help finish the ceiling? If any more water gets through, those unicorns won't be long for this life. By the time the ceiling began to knit itself together, darkness had fallen over the room. Coot had come and went, leaving her plate of sandwiches. A few crusts still lay on the silver platter. Draco did not know what time it was, only that the room had begun to look less like a ruin, and that the gas lamps had lit. The furniture next. Potter lifted the bed's coverlet and grimaced. Draco did not want to know what he might have found there. I'm having a break, Draco announced, and poured himself a cup of tea from the flask Coot had left. Can I ask you something? Potter sat down across from Draco on the now bare floor and reached for the flask. You just did. Potter made a face. What are you, 13? You bring it out in me, Draco muttered. Potter had no idea how true that was. Don't take this the wrong way, because I'm not... I mean, I don't mean to criticise you or say you shouldn't or anything. It's just... Draco knew where this was going. Why do I bother? No, Potter said. I know why. Draco stared at him. You do? Even with what happened here? Even with who lived here? He wanted to ask, but didn't. If I had something like this, something from my family... Potter stared down at his cup of tea, watching the steam rise from it in hazy swirls. No, I was wondering why you're doing this alone. I'm not alone, Draco said. I have Coot, and... He was going to say his mother, but that wasn't even remotely true at this point. Pansy comes by sometimes, and Greg, and Blaze. They did not exactly help with repairs, but still, they counted. He wasn't some recluse, at least he wasn't some recluse on purpose. Well, I'll help, as long as I'm here with the investigation, I mean. Draco was suddenly too aware of how close they were sitting. Potter's knees were maybe an inch away from his own. He felt dizzy. All right, he said. He refilled Potter's cup without his asking. He hoped that was thanks enough. Harry dodged 4 people, 7 rolls of parchment, and an owl on his way to the Aura office. Beyond the heavy oak doors, Georgie Lemke and Ron were deep in conversation in Ron's cubicle, jabbing their wands at a large piece of parchment laid out over the desk. Harry raised a hand in greeting, and Ron smiled with half his mouth, quickly going back to his parchment. Harry's in-tray overflowed with memos. He grabbed the lot and shoved them into his bag, not bothering to flip through them. He ducked in on Morag next. Morning, he told her, leaning up against the partition. So bloody close, Morag said, waving the Fishelburn photographs at him. I can feel it. Morag usually got murderous close to the end of a case. Harry knew it would be nearly time for an arrest when she started speaking only in monosyllables. Right, Harry said. I'm on my way to Malfoy Manor and wanted to know if you needed me to do anything. Morag had a grim look on her face. Dark eyebrows pulled low over her eyes as she examined the photographs. It's a matter of time, she muttered, almost to herself. Yeah, said Harry unconvincingly. About what I said before, with the needing of anything. Oh, right, Morag said, looking up. I'm dropping in on Malfoy Manor today. Higher-ups want us to do a full scan of the house. Dark arts, you know. Make sure there aren't any dark artifacts lying around that Malfoy Minor could be using to... He isn't, Harry said. Morag frowned. Have you done a thorough scan of the house? All of it, including the cellar and the attics. There are attics? I mean, no, but nothing, Potter. You can't be vouching for him. You know what people are capable of. Morag glanced at the Fishelburn photographs. You know what people can do, even when you think they've changed. If there was one thing that unsettled Harry most about the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, it wouldn't be all the blood, or the gory photographs, or the constant facing of death. It would be how quickly auras started to get that dead look on their faces as they told you what people could be capable of. He's not doing it, Harry insisted. Malfoy is as surprised by the poltergeist as anyone else. They've damaged the manor as much as they have the village. It doesn't make sense for him to be behind it. Morag fixed him with a sceptical look. Whatever. Still, got to go do a full scan. Top to bottom, she made a face. Should take all bloody day. Personally, I'd rather focus on Fishelburn, but orders are orders. As he and Morag walked to the apparition point, Harry thought about Draco and Mrs. Coles, and how proud Draco had been when he was able to scrounge up enough muggle notes for dinner. This was not, he thought, something he could use as evidence of lack of wrongdoing, but it felt significant all the same. They apparated into the familiar country lane, closer now that Harry had pinpointed the outlines of the wards on Malfoy Manor. Morag looked vaguely impressed as Harry dissolved the gate with a serpentine flick of his wand. Less arguing with Metalcraft this way, Morag said. To be honest, I kind of miss it, Harry admitted, as they passed through the translucent gates. You would, you complete and utter weirdo. Morag clapped him on the shoulder and they strode up the drive towards the door. She rapped efficiently on the wood and the door swung open to reveal Coot in her floral pillowcase. "Shoes off, if you please," Coot told them, standing back to let them through into the hall. "And Coot will be taking your coats." Morag shrugged off her jacket and handed it over without really looking at Coot, too busy peering down the corridor. "Thanks, Coot," Harry said, passing her his robes.
"You is very welcome, Master Harry," Coot said,
examining his robes with her usual look of genial disapproval.
"Coot will be taking these to be cleaned."
She snapped her fingers and disappeared, leaving nothing but a quiet clap of air in her wake. Morag didn't so much as flinch. "Now where is the Lord of the Manor?" Morag mused, eyeing the portraits with interest. There was the sound of footsteps, and Draco rounded the corner ahead of them. He looked flushed, grinning.
"Potter! Potter! Coot and I found the oddest—"
He spotted Morag, and his face smoothed over like someone raking away footsteps from the dirt.
"MacDougall?"
Morag looked between Harry and Draco, blinking.
"Morning, Malfoy."
"Robards wants us to scan the whole house," Harry said apologetically. "He wanted us both to do it, so
one of you could keep an eye on me."
Draco folded his arms tightly across his chest. "So it won't take 34 years, Harry finished. Morag was watching them both with mild interest.
"Right, well, we have actual work to do, so I'm going to leave you two to whatever this is.
Potter, I'll work clockwise. You do anti-clockwise and we'll meet in the middle."
"Deal,"
Harry said, pulling his wand out. "Do you want the courtyard or should I do it?"
"Whoever finishes the first floor."
Morag nodded at them, walked the rest of the way down the hall and turned left.
"Potter," Draco said quietly. "I don't want her seeing the upper floors."
Draco sounded as if every word pained his throat and his face had gone an odd shade of pink. Harry thought of the blue bedroom and the dozens of similarly ruined rooms that surrounded it. "I don't think we can get out of it entirely. Robards wants the whole thing done and soon."
"Teach me the damn spell," Draco demanded. "Come on, if MacDougall sees that and tells her mother.
Merlin, my mother would never want to show her face in British society again." "What about the ground floor? That's not too bad," Harry said slowly, thinking hard. "We could take the rest. She really wants to work on this other case we have. She doesn't give a damn about this one, really." They had pitched their voices low and accordingly were standing quite close together in the corridor. Malfoy's skin smelled of soap. Bits of blonde hair fell down into his face, catching the light from the windows. Draco spoke slowly, his gaze slipping down Harry's face.
"She could do the cellars, maybe. They were always awful. There won't be much difference."
The cellars, Harry thought dumbly, watching Draco. Voldemort had kept people imprisoned there. Ollivander and Griphook and Luna. Luna, who now sent Draco Christmas cards. Harry wondered what Draco had done to rate that. He wondered if he had visited her. He thought of how frightened Draco had looked that night, years and years ago, just steps from where they stood now. He still had never set foot in that drawing room, the door at the end of the hallway always shut.
"Was that MacDougall, of the Scottish MacDougalls?" inquired one of the portraits in a high, carrying voice. "She is improperly dressed for an aura. Dragonhide!"
Harry and Draco stepped hastily back from each other. "I'll teach you the spell," Harry said. "Come on, let's do this corridor first." Draco did not try the spell the first time until they reached a long, heavily decorated room he called the Grey Gallery. Wood panelling and a lattice ceiling made the space feel quite cramped. The double rows of gilded portraits gave the impression of a rather crowded and historically improbable queue. Several of the portraits were empty, their inhabitants most likely finding other locations more interesting.
"Do you ever get lost?" Harry wondered, trying to figure out where exactly they were in the house.
The trouble with Malfoy Manor was, amongst other things, that corridors seemed to be an afterthought in many parts of the house. Rooms just led into other rooms in no discernible order, like a posh and dusty rabbit warren.
"It's my house," Draco said, mimicking the patterns for the detection spell and mouthing the words.
"I think you need a map, you know, for outsiders." If Draco were to disappear at this moment, Harry was fairly sure he'd wind up wandering through rooms for years, going up and down staircases, never to emerge again. It wasn't as if Malfoy Manor was the largest stately house he's ever seen. It wasn't even particularly enormous, for what it was. It was just confusing.
"If there weren't so many bloody additions, we'd just have the Great Hall, and everyone would have to sleep on rushes," Draco said. "Shall I just Do it, then. Give it a go.
Harry stood back and watched as Draco performed the spell, his forehead knit together. He held his wand carefully, almost gingerly, as if it was hot to touch. Slowly, the room began to fill with light. Harry took out his notebook and the gel pens Hermione had given him as a joke that he had ended up using almost every day, and began to take down the information. He was jotting down his observations surrounding an ancient sofa that appeared to have been embroidered with images of a rather brutal troll battle, when Draco gave a surprised shout.
"What?" Harry began, and then stopped, as he did not need to ask what any more.
A poltergeist was hurtling across the grey gallery, holding a walking stick in his translucent fist.
"May the house fall upon your head," he shrieked,
and used his walking stick to unseat the upper row of portraits to the left. The gilt frames smashed to the ground, tearing through furniture and scratching the floor.
"Oh, fuck," Harry said, and began the barrage of spells.
As usual, no hex seemed to land on the poltergeist, and he took instead to various protective charms, attempting to limit the damage.
"Which one's this?" panted Harry, freezing an armchair in place a few inches from where it was about to hurtle through a mullioned window.
"My grandfather," Draco said, and ducked a footstool. "Abraxas."
"An absolute bloody disgrace," shouted the poltergeist.
Harry could see that he wore fairly modern dress robes, although his mutton chops were not exactly contemporary. A bolt of light shot past Harry's shoulder. Morag had appeared in the doorway with her wand raised.
"The fuck?"
She pitched her voice over the cacophony of another row of portraits becoming violently dislodged from the wall. The poltergeist went on howling something about ancestry and duty, then attempted to chuck a mouldering throw blanket at them. The only incapacitating aspect of the move was the sudden shower of spiders.
"The actual fuck!"
Morag shouted, brushing spiders from her hair. Draco pushed Harry aside as the end table came careering past a splinter in a now vacant portrait. There was a sharp crack, and the poltergeist disappeared as suddenly as he had came.
"Bizarre," said Morag, looking at the place where the poltergeist had last been howling.
"But I'm still not convinced this is our department."
"Cheers," Draco said dryly. He righted an overturned armchair. This did not do much to change the room's new resemblance to a shipwreck. Harry knelt by a cluster of portraits. Luckily, none of them appeared to be slashed or broken. The inhabitants had all fled for other environs, but other than their absence, the canvases seemed all right.
"Merlin, I hate these old piles," Morag said, flicking a spider from her shoulder.
"Dust and history and a lot of bloody judgmental portraits. One of them in the dining room called me a harridan. Glad I'm not inheriting. Give me a new build in the city over this any day."
"I've got to check on the portraits," Draco said, darting occasional glowers in Morag's direction. "There'll be nightmares just about now." He stalked from the room, a spider still clinging to his right shoulder. Harry pushed Morag aside. "Would you do me a favour?"
"Depends on the content. Buy you a drink, yes. Help you move house, no.
Would you let me catalogue the rest of the house? You can work on Fishelburn. I know you'd rather anyway."
Morag looked askance at him.
"You're not covering Malfoy Minor's arse for something, are you?"
Harry shifted. "Nothing that is important to the investigation or illegal." Morag did not blink for a very long minute.
"Yeah, all right," she said finally, shrugging.
"I bloody hate being in places like this, and I don't see the point of this investigation anyway. Really think this is one for the spirit squad."
"Cheers, Morag. I owe you one."
Harry clapped Morag on the shoulder, grinning.
"You owe me 12, Morag said.
"I'm going to work from home. No use getting Robards in a twist. Have this done soon, all right? I don't want to have to deal with the hassle."
"Definitely. No problem."
Harry beckoned Morag out of the grey gallery. "I'll show you the way out. It's a bloody maze in here."
"No need. Pure blood, remember?"
Morag waggled her fingers like she was doing sign language applause.
"I've been here before."
Oh, right," Harry said, pretending as if he had not entirely forgotten this fact. Morag waved and disappeared into the next room.
"We shall all be scrap," sighed a forlorn portrait of a young girl. She was holding a vicious-looking dog in her lap. "Woe betide us all."
Harry found Draco in the drawing room, attempting to convince a dozen figures huddled into one portrait that the Great Gallery was not, in fact, host to their imminent demise.
"Morag's gone to work on our other case," Harry told him. "We've just got to scan the rest of the house in the next day or so."
"Oh," Draco said, turning around.
He looked very young all of a sudden, all the pointy rigidity gone from his expression.
I thank you.
Harry was not sure how to respond, besides an awkward, "You're welcome." That was the first poltergeist I knew. Personally, that is, not in portraits. Draco's eyes had fallen upon a carved heraldic wyvern. Odd. That was the first time I thought of the poltergeists as ghosts. But they're not ghosts, right? No, they're not ghosts. Draco had a funny expression that Harry could not quite piece together, a little bitter and a little young. Shall we visit the source? Without a word, and assuming Harry would follow, Draco set off through the bare stone courtyard. Harry wished he was slightly less predictable and followed close at his heels. "Would you wait up a minute?" he asked, trying to get his bearings. At some point he would understand how to navigate this place. Apparently some point was not now. Draco did not answer, but pushed through a pair of heavy oak doors emblazoned with wyverns and into a minuscule antechamber. They passed then into a rectangular room with a high vaulted ceiling. What could have once been pews were pushed together at the far end of the room. An enormous stained glass window dominated one wall that Harry saw as he stepped closer, held a sprawling family tree. Countless names glinted in the afternoon light, the details so precise and fluid that it could only have been made by magic. Harry thought immediately of the black tapestry that still clung to the wall in Grimmauld Place. Large letters near the ceiling proclaimed House of Malfoy, Sanctimonia Vincet Semper. "So distractible, Potter," said Draco, and gingerly tugged Harry's elbow to get him moving again. Harry absently touched his elbow as he followed Draco down a flight of stone steps to a dusty, windowless room. Harry's eyes adjusted slowly to the dim light, but soon he could make out the four levels of shelves and, stacked upon them, rows and rows of coffins. "This is where all Malfoys go, in the end, if they don't wind up in Azkaban, that is." Draco's tone was prickly. "Sometimes even if they do. Bribe the right guard and you can have them shipped home for in-house disintegration." A handful of coffins appeared newer, untarnished wood draped with red velvet cloth, but on most the cloth was moth-bitten and tatty. Further back, some of the older coffins had begun to rot away, exposing lead cases beneath. Harry spotted massive, capacious coffins and heartbreakingly tiny ones, hardly longer than a loaf of bread. A few bare skulls were tucked humbly into the few empty spaces, next to ornate urns and small plaques bearing the names of their inhabitants. "Somewhat undignified," Draco commented, nodding at the exposed bones. "We're not sure who those are, truth be told." "I thought it would be grander," Harry said, thinking about the white tomb that encased Dumbledore like a monument. "It's so cramped, disorderly, hoarder-esque." Harry shrugged. "All of the above." Draco strolled down the row of the deceased, wiping spiderwebs from the labels. "Down further is my father. Lucius Malfoy, so hungry for acclaim when he was alive, had sprung from a marble coffin in death." The flat-pack stacking of ancestors around his resting place somewhat distracted from the grandeur. Harry squinted at the inscription. "Lucius Abraxas Malfoy, 1954 to 1999. Sanctimonia Vincet Semper." "I'm sorry," Harry said.
"No, you're not."
"No, I'm not," Harry admitted, "but I am sorry you lost your father." Draco looked back, his face shadowed. He seemed to be watching Harry intently, his eyes raking over his face. "Thanks," he said finally. They were quiet for a long moment, their breathing amplified in the small space. Harry began to feel nervous. He didn't think it was all the skeletons. Harry wasn't particularly afraid of death, seeing as he had already died once, but something about the atmosphere. Harry looked away. He did not know what to say, so he thought about the appearance of Abraxas Malfoy. "There's something your poltergeists remind me of," he said slowly. "At my house. There's his portrait. My house used to be the home of the Black family."
"I know," Draco said.
"Right, well, the portrait tends to go after people in the same way your poltergeists do. A lot of talk about stains of dishonour, that sort of thing. To me and the others, to muggleborns and, well, blood traitors."
"Blood traitors,"
Draco repeated. I thought, what if there's something in your house that's enchanted like Mrs. Black's portrait, to rebel against a behaviour it's not so keen on? You think I might be a blood traitor? The look on Draco's face was complicated. He had gone all pointy again. Well, no. I mean, maybe? Harry shrugged uncomfortably. It's just a thought. We could test it out if you wanted. Draco looked at him pointedly for a while and then said, fine. 15 minutes later, they apparated into the small square of Grimald Place, where the grass in the centre struggled valiantly against winter, and London itself in its attempt to grow into more than little tufts. There were two new iron benches now in the square, signifiers of the area's economic upturn. Harry Potter's residence is at number 12 Grimald Place, London, Harry told Draco, who gave him an odd look. Why are you... Oh. Draco watched as number 12 emerged from between numbers 11 and 13. Your secret keeper to your own house. Hermione had once been secret keeper, but it had become so awkward owling her whenever he wanted to shag someone, he decided it was worth it to do it himself. He was not sure how to explain this to Draco. I've been here before, you know, Draco told him as they walked across the street towards the pavement. When I was very small, there were dinner parties. He looked up at the house with a look of dawning memory, blinked rapidly in the cold evening air. Mother didn't like them, I think, but she always made us attend anyway. Harry unlocked the front door with a tap of his wand, and waiting for the creaking of gears to subside before opening it to reveal the front hallway. I hope it's not like you remembered, he said, picturing the rather horrific decor choices of the Black family. I recall something about beheaded house elves. Harry grimaced. Gone, thankfully. Creature had thrown a fit, but Harry was confident the indoctrination couldn't last forever. Putting aside Hermione's secret keeper, leading a one-night stand up a staircase lined with elf heads tended to put a dampener on any intimate activities. He had kept, however, the serpent-shaped doorknobs. They seemed rather friendly. This is nice, Draco said when they were inside. Not entirely awful. We were able to get rid of a lot of the old things, but not Sirius's mum's portrait. Harry nodded at the curtains up ahead. My great aunt Walburga. Draco tucked his hands tightly into his pockets. His shoulders were up by his ears. Well, how does this work? We open the curtains and see if she shouts at you. Harry strode forward. Come on, let's see. Draco's face glimmered parchment white as Harry drew back the curtain. Filthy half-breed, begone from this, the house of my lineage, you disgusting! Walburga Black had caught sight of Draco, and her yellowing face twisted into a simpering smile. Darling Narcissa's boy, how he has grown, just the picture of his father! Draco dragged the curtains shut, and the hallway went silent again. No, he said, forehead working painfully. I suppose since my portraits don't recognise me as... Well, that's a bust. Draco, Harry said slowly, fighting back a smile, were you hoping you counted as a blood traitor? No, Draco snapped, but his ears were pink. Harry suddenly wanted to do something absolutely out of character. He wanted to touch Draco's nose or his earlobe or hold him tightly about the waist. The thought was so surprising that he had to look away. All the dust at the manor, he thought wildly. Something had to have been clouding his brain. Come on, I'll make tea, Harry said, instead of facing the deluge of bizarre images that the dust had clearly implanted into his mind. He led Draco down the narrow stairs to the kitchen, where someone with very bushy brown hair was sitting at the long table, stirring a mug of tea with a flick of her wand and listening to charms over Notting Hill. Hermione? Harry could feel Draco tense up behind him. They were not touching, and Harry couldn't see him, but he could practically feel Draco pulling inward on himself, his arms crossing over his chest. Hermione turned around. To her credit, the surprise on her face when she saw Draco quickly smoothed over into a rather awkward attempt at a smile. Hello, Harry. Malfoy? Granger, Draco said. We were testing out a theory about the poltergeist problem, Harry said. He did not know why he felt he needed to explain himself. This was his house, after all, but there was something horrifically understanding on Hermione's face that made him need to clarify. I see,
said Hermione, still looking unbearably tolerant. "And was your theory proven correct?"
"No," said Harry. He did not know what else to do, so he put the kettle on.
Draco stood awkwardly by the doorstep, tension written all over his features. As Harry had predicted, he had his arms crossed so tightly he was gripping one bicep with white knuckles. The poltergeists sort of, well, they act a bit like Sirius's mum, only more physical.
"They attack you?"
Harry got out two mugs. He could have gone for the full tea service, but for some reason he didn't want to do that in front of Hermione. Sort of, indirectly. They attack everything and you happen to be, well, there. Although they do shout a lot about stains upon their households, which could have been at us.
"And you wanted to see if Malfoy would be given the same treatment by Mrs. Black?"
Hermione stirred her tea thoughtfully.
"It's an interesting theory. Do your portraits treat you like the poltergeists do?"
Draco did not seem to realise immediately that Hermione had addressed him.
"No,"
he said coldly, and then seemed to wince. "I mean to say, the portraits at the manor do not generally. I don't think many of them exactly approve of my stewardship, or at least at the present condition of said stewardship, but they don't generally shout obscenities without specific cause." Hermione hummed thoughtfully. "I should go," Draco said. He darted a look at the fireplace and the jar of flu powder sitting on top of the mantel, and then at Hermione.
"Are you sure you don't want to stay for tea?"
Harry motioned at the two mugs.
"No, no thank you."
Draco's eyes didn't seem to know where to settle. He was glancing at Hermione, the fireplace, Harry, and the mugs in quick succession. "I must be going. Thank you for your hospitality. See you tomorrow." He nearly backed out of the room in his haste to leave. "Goodbye," he added as an afterthought, and went back up the stairs. The front door shut with a resounding thud before he could ask if Draco wanted to flu rather than apparate. "That was odd," Harry said, looking at the doorway.
"I thought it went all right, considering," Hermione sipped her tea. "Although you forgot we had plans, Harry."
"We did?" Harry hit his forehead. "Oh, bugger! Sorry, Hermione. Morag was at the manor today and we had another poltergeist attack, and then I've just had an idea about Mrs. Black, so..."
"It's all right, Harry. I understand. I've got a nice bit of time to catch up on the wireless. Can you believe Glenys's brother-in-law was really dragging me around to Polyjuice? Ridiculous. Although I think Creature is avoiding me."
Harry would bet the contents of his Gringotts vault that Creature did not want another explanation about fair wages and holiday time. "Sorry I've been so distracted. We just don't know where to go with the investigation," Harry admitted, sitting across from Hermione with his mug. "Morag is focused on this other case that she really isn't thinking about the manor, and we've just been doing it ourselves." Hermione was watching him with her brown eyes narrowed. It was a familiar look, but its familiarity did not make Harry feel less like he was being X-rayed.
"Well," she said, "it is an interesting conundrum."
"Morag?
The poltergeist."
Hermione drummed her fingers on the table.
"They seem so intimately connected to the Malfoy lineage that I wonder if anything like this has ever happened before. There must be something about the enchantments done on the property. Does the house have any historical records?"
"Only about 1 million, Harry said, thinking of the rows and rows of books he had perused in the library. "I couldn't get through them all. They're all in, like, old English with healthy servings of extra Latin."
"Well, I'm off work tomorrow, and Ron has a case he's stuck in the office with all weekend. If you'd like, I could take a look."
Hermione shifted in her seat.
"And so long as I'm there, I wouldn't mind having a look at some of his grimoires. I've read that the Malfoys have a few very rare editions."
"Really?" Harry could have kissed her. "I'll ask Draco if he minds, but honestly, it'd be a real help."
"Draco?"
Hermione raised an eyebrow.
"Yes, do ask him. I wouldn't want to step on any toes."
"Hold on, I'll fire call." Harry went to the fireplace and got a handful of silvery flu powder, threw it into the flames and stuck his head gracelessly into the grate. "Malfoy Manor," he said loudly, and there was a rush of wizarding rooms until the kitchen of Malfoy Manor slotted into space. Coote was dozing at one of the long tables, mid-polish of a silver goblet.
Excuse me," Harry called.
"Coote, is Draco there?" Coote jolted awake, fumbling the silver goblet to the floor.
"Oh, you will be excusing Coote? Master Harry, so clumsy these days, so terrible. Yes, yes, Master Draco's in the violet parlour. Coote will just be fetching him now."
She disappeared with a pop, and Harry was left alone in the cavernous space, but for a few scattered paintings. "Potter?" Harry saw Draco's feet before he saw the rest of him. His shoes were scuffed, and as he knelt in front of the fireplace, Harry could see the worn places on the knees of his trousers. "Hi," Harry said. Draco looked torn between looking pointedly embarrassed and amused. "Potter, did you have a question that couldn't wait until, 12 hours from now?" "Yes, I was talking to Hermione about the poltergeist problem, and she was wondering about the house records. I told her I'd seen a lot in the library." "Yes, and more in the muniment room. I've gone through many of them, but..." "Why? Does she want to have a look? I could owl some to you." "No, she, Well, we thought it might be quicker if she just came by to look in person. Would you mind?" "Would I mind?" Draco had gone quite pale. "Are you sure that's a good idea, Potter?" "I don't see why not. Hermione's brilliant at research. She also wanted to have a look at your grimoires, if that's all right." "Oh," Draco said. The firelight glinted green in his pale grey eyes. He was not looking at Harry, but at something slightly to his left, perhaps the edge of his ear, or the places his hair tended to stick up. "If she doesn't mind, I don't. Mind, that is." "Brilliant." Harry grinned at Draco, feeling if he did that enough, then perhaps he might stop looking so peaky. "Brilliant. Then we'll see you tomorrow." Draco looked at Harry then. He was biting his lip and the colour stood out starkly pinkish in his white face. "See you tomorrow," he said, and stood up before Harry could say anything more. Left with a view of Draco's shoes and a glimpse of pale ankle, he took his head out of the fireplace. "Well?" Hermione rested her head on her hand, watching him. "What does he say?" Harry decided not to worry about it. "He said he'll see us tomorrow." Draco stood at the window in the grey gallery. Two small shapes walked up the long drive, becoming more visible with every step. Potter waved his wand to dissolve the gate, and Hermione Granger stepped through with him, eyeing the house with interest. His stomach plunged, and he stepped abruptly away from the glass. This had been a terrible idea. The only other time Granger had been to Malfoy Manor, she'd been violently tortured by Draco's deranged auntie, whilst Draco had stood shaking in a corner of the room and tried to disappear. The memory rushed over him like a cold pail of water, or a sudden infestation of chilled flobberworms. There was a sharp knock on the door. Draco stood very still.
"Master Draco, is Coot to be greeting the guests?"
Coot appeared in the doorway, hands on her hips. She looked entirely schoolmarmish. "No, that's all right," Draco said. Granger wasn't keen on house elves working in houses, or something like that. Best not to put her off right away. Draco braced his shoulders and made his way to the entrance, and, feeling like he would rather bury himself underground than face this experience, opened the door. Potter, wiping his glasses on his jumper, grinned up at him before climbing the stairs. Granger followed at a lag with a chronically polite expression. Draco stepped back to let them into the hallway and closed the door. It was too late to make a run for it. He would have to get a grip. "Hi, Draco," Potter said, and slid his glasses back on. He frowned. "Are you feeling all right?" "Fine," Draco said faintly, watching Granger. She was peering into the frame of Septimus Malfoy II's portrait.
"Are those Nifflers in the background?"
Yes, actually. He kept a colony of Nifflers out in the old folly, used to set them out on the grounds to dig up treasure. Septimus II's portrait nodded imperiously. "Mighty useful beasts," he told them. "Hmm," said Granger. "Shall we go?" Draco wished he would stop looking pathetically towards Potter, like Potter might be able to explain how to behave in this situation, but he couldn't quite help it.
"Yes, thank you."
Granger turned away from the portrait, and Draco turned around before he had to make excessive eye contact. He led them through to the corridor outside of the library, Potter just at his elbow. "Right," Potter said, grinning. "Hermione, this is the library, the small library. I've got to do a bit more scanning upstairs and I'll come back down when I've finished, all right?" Granger was staring at the oak doors, like she wasn't sure if she was allowed to touch it. Draco hastily stepped forward to open it for her.
"Oh, thank you, Draco," said Granger, stepping through.
Draco shot Potter a panicked look. Potter just went on beaming, like a very handsome and irritating son.
"Do I stay with her?"
Draco looked in at Hermione. She put her bag on a low table, then leaned down to examine the ruffling feathers of a small porcelain peacock. "Or does she want me to leave her alone?" You could ask her, Potter pointed out.
Don't be ridiculous.
Draco bit his lip. I shouldn't leave her alone in here. What if there's a poltergeist? Not that she can't handle herself, but I could have Coot stay with her if she isn't uncomfortable with me. What do you think? Potter didn't say anything.
Well, what do you think? Draco demanded. Would you ask her? I can't. What if she's too bloody polite to say she can't stand the sight of me?
Potter's eyes were large and round and fixed entirely on Draco. An absent smile played about his mouth. All right, he said finally. I'll ask her.
Well, go on then, Draco hissed, pushing Potter through the door.
He stood back to give them privacy.
We haven't had this many moors in the house since we hosted the Egyptian Ministry of Magic, said Lucius Malfoy the Fourth conversationally.
Please never speak again, Draco told him. Potter emerged from the library a moment later, doing a discreet thumbs up that Draco wished were less gratifying than it was.
It's all right. You can do your paperwork and answer her questions about classification systems. She says she doesn't mind.
Don't break anything upstairs, Draco told him, looking at the doorway of the library as if it were perhaps rigged with some form of explosive hex.
No promises, Potter said and touched Draco very lightly on the elbow. It'll be all right.
You can bugger off now, Draco told him. His elbow tingled.
Consider me buggered, Potter said, as if Draco didn't have enough on his mind.
Inside the library, Granger was poring through the bookshelves with a face of unmitigated delight.
I've gone through most of them already, Draco said, sitting gingerly at his desk.
Oh, I'm sure, Granger said, nodding. I'll just have a look as well. You'd really be doing me a favour. It's such an opportunity with all these primary source documents.
Draco watched her take down a few dusty volumes.
The oldest of those dates back to the 13th century, he told her. The one with the red binding.
Oh!
Hermione examined the leather book, setting it gently on a side table. Draco wished Potter was here. He wasn't sure if he was meant to mention what had happened in the house to Granger, or just to go on pretending nothing was wrong. The latter held distinct appeal. But Granger was a talking-about-it sort of person. He attempted to estimate the rent from the Muggle farms and had a complete blank on calculating charms, and also the ability to hold numbers in his head.
You were listening to charms over Notting Hill yesterday, he said after watching Granger pore through three books and an old journal.
Oh, yes, said Granger, lifting her bushy head. It's absolute rubbish, of course, but I do like it.
I like it too, Draco admitted.
Although I'm not really sure where they think they're going with this Dragomir plotline, Granger mused.
I know, Draco said. Dragomir was absolutely in the same scenes as Glennis's brother-in-law in past episodes. How are they getting around that?
Shoddy plotting.
Granger shook her head so that her hair wobbled in a disappointed sort of way.
I knew Ludwig had to be shady, but to combine him with another shady character just feels like a load of flimflam.
Draco couldn't suppress his laugh. I've never heard anyone use that word before, but yes, a load of flimflam. They smiled at each other. And then Draco realised that they were smiling at each other and had to look away before it stopped. The last time Granger was here, she had been tortured, and here he was prattling on about some terrible wireless programme. The rustling of papers started up again. Granger was paging through the books and scribbling down notes on a roll of parchment.
There are quite a lot of contradictions in the enchantments done on the property, she said, frowning. It's hard to tell what's still in use.
My mother says that the network of spells on this place are too tangled for anyone to make sense of them.
Draco's mother had spent a lot of time before the occupation trying to make the house and the grounds safer. She obviously was not successful.
The ones I know of are the muggle-repelling charm, that's on the house and half of the grounds, and the anti-disapparation jinx on the, cellar.
Draco could feel his face heat up.
Yes, that makes sense, Granger said, not looking up from her notes. They were dungeons originally, prior to the 16th century.
Yes, said Draco.
Granger settled her shoulders and put her parchment to one side, turning to face Draco.
Listen, Draco, I'd appreciate it if you would stop flinching at everything I said. I'm not a game of exploding snap.
I know you're not.
Draco looked down at his hands,
talking about it. Hopefully he could do it quickly and then launch himself into space. He hoped Potter appreciated this. The last time you were here was not ideal.
At this, Granger let out a rather loud bark of laughter.
You and Harry really are well suited. I hope you invest in joint counselling. You'll need it. Not ideal, no. Joint, no, I meant just... What had he meant? He meant that he had been awful to Granger in school. And then he had watched her getting tortured, and now they were sitting in his library and she was helping him look up historical records with Potter upstairs doing yet another favour. He wasn't sure how this had happened, but he was sure it was unsustainable. Draco, were you the one responsible for what happened to me here? No, Draco said reluctantly. Were you or were you not a minor who did his best, considering the circumstances, to thwart what had happened?
I didn't do my best. Draco swallowed hard. I didn't.
Well, it's my decision whether or not to be traumatised at the moment, and I would appreciate it if you would stop hovering and let me get on with what I came here to do. Granger fixed him with a look that he was entirely sure she had learned from Professor McGonagall. This did not make it any less effective. Also, I want to borrow the Grand Grimoire and the 73rd book of occult philosophy.
All right, said Draco, blinking.
Also, I would appreciate it if you would call me Hermione.
Okay. Draco watched her, waiting to see if she had anything else to add. She did not. She went back to scribbling with the air of a job well done. Morning ticked over to afternoon, and Hermione did not hex him, nor punch him in the face. Instead, she asked him questions about shelving, and dates, and the location of other sources. Potter ducked in and out of the room several times with a face like a hopeful Krupp, and informed them that his task was going well, and how was theirs. No poltergeists made themselves known. It was altogether not a success. At just gone 5, Hermione shut her book and stood up. I'm having coffee with Ginny in an hour. I should go before I get too stuck in. Draco nodded.
Do you want to take the books with you, or shall I owl them?
I'll just carry them out, thank you, Draco. Hermione smiled at him, which was startling and not at all unpleasant. I could see if I could find Harry, but I suppose it would be easy just to send a Patronus.
Most likely, Draco admitted. I can show you the way out.
Hermione nodded and cast a Patronus. A silvery otter went racing out of the room, and then they left the library together. I've noticed that some of your portraits are sleeping, Hermione said as they walked through the house. Portraits at Hogwarts seem to sleep a lot, or pretend to, whenever convenient. Yours seem quite active. Have you noticed that?
They don't sleep, really. Not lately. I think they're keen on haranguing me.
Did they used to sleep?
Hermione stepped neatly into the entrance hallway. Draco thought about it.
Yes, I suppose they did. Why?
I was just wondering if there might be a connection.
Granger tapped her fingers rhythmically on her armful of books.
I'll have a think about it.
For his part, Draco was thinking about how he could possibly say thank you. The idea of saying it felt trite and inadequate, also faintly humiliating, but his mother had been quite clear about etiquette. Although there was no situation in Madame Armoury's Guide to the Modern Gentle Wizard that encompassed a search for poltergeists, a previous torture and 6 years of constant tormenting, clearly something was needed. Perhaps a fruit basket, or a card that Draco did not have to deliver in person.
Listen, Hermione, Draco began, steeling his stomach. I wanted to thank you for, well, everything. You didn't have to come today.
Of course I didn't, Hermione said. And although I don't regret helping you, it wasn't just on your behalf.
It wasn't. Potter had called in a favour, presumably. Another one. If Draco had to send Potter a fruit basket, he really would have to launch himself into space. Possibly Mars.
No, said Hermione. Oh, look, there's Harry.
Sure enough, Potter was jogging down the hallway towards them. Just made it, he announced. I was all the way at the other end of the house, and then I took the wrong staircase. Then I ran into Coote, and also a sort of armour that is... Well, I fixed it. Potter flushed, which only served to make his eyes look greener. Anyway, I wanted to see you off.
I've got to meet Ginny, Hermione said, checking her watch. Now, if you both would just let me go, that would be lovely.
The door's that way, Potter pointed, smirking.
Cheers, said Hermione and kissed Potter's cheek.
She did a sort of friendly nod at Draco and then disappeared out the front door and onto the drive.
How did it go? Potter asked, watching her leave.
She wants me to call her Hermione, Draco said. She also wants me to stop telling her when to be traumatised.
Potter's bark of laughter made Draco jolt. "I'm almost finished upstairs," he said. "And you need to work on calling me Harry if you're going to call Hermione Hermione." A terrible thought dawned on Draco. "You didn't scan my bedroom, did you?"
No. I thought that might be..."
"No. Nice plaque on the door, by the way." Draco did not throw himself bodily into the fireplace to be consumed by waiting death, but it was a near thing. "I wrote it when I was 8.
"You're a precocious 8-year-old, Harry said. He was grinning. He really was unbearably good-looking. Draco figured that this was his punishment for his entire life. "I suppose I should go soon." Harry looked towards the darkening window, absently touching his lower lip.
"You can stay for supper," Draco said, his heart thudding. "I mean, if you want to. Obviously you don't have to. It's not part of your duties, or..."
"All right," said Harry.
They made their way towards the kitchen, side by side.